We are frequently told rural America is in crisis. According to many journalists, academics, and politicians, our small towns have been hollowed out by lost jobs and residents have turned to opioids and right-wing extremism to cope with their pain and resentment. In fact, many rural towns are thriving. Commentators have fixated on the steep decline of one region, Appalachia, and overlooked the millions of rural Americans who are succeeding in the heartland. That, according to our next guest, the author of the new book, The Overlooked Americans. Public policy expert Elizabeth Currid Halkett says that rural America has not been left behind the rest of the nation, but instead is surprisingly successful. Drawing on deep research, including data and in-depth interviews, she traces how small towns are doing as well or better than cities by many measures. Again, the name of the book is The Overlooked Americans, The Resilience of Our Rural Towns and What It Means for Our Country. And it's a pleasure to welcome Elizabeth Currid Halkett to the roundtable this morning. Elizabeth, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
What brought you to look at these overlooked Americans?
Well, I was born in West Virginia. My parents are Irish immigrants, and that's where they landed when they came to the United States. And then when my mom, she's actually doing residency or in West Virginia. She went to West Virginia, and then she went to Pittsburgh. And she's an ER doctor in West Virginia, and then she went to Pittsburgh to do some training. And she had three young children under, I think we were all like three and under, if you can imagine. And she got an opportunity in Boston, Massachusetts, and she got an opportunity at a rural hospital. And they just couldn't make it happen in a big city. You know, they just didn't have the kind of money to do that. So they ended up going to Danville, Pennsylvania, where my mom got a job at a local hospital. And I grew up there. It's this really small town along the Susquehanna River, 5,000 people, Republican with McCain. It's a kind of classic, you know, rural town, and its politics are very similar to many other rural towns. And so after I lived there, I went to undergrad in Pittsburgh. I went to graduate school in New York. I went to Los Angeles to be a professor, which is where I am now. And when Trump won the White House and everyone was, you know, freaking out on the coast and saying, oh my gosh, you know, rural America, they're really making their voice known. They making it clear how angry they are. I just didn't buy it. I knew these people. I grew up with them. And I wanted to understand them more deeply because I felt that the media had created this kind of shorthand caricature of rural America that just didn't do it any service.
And part of that shorthand is that these rural towns have been left behind by the rest of America.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the basis. They've been left behind. They are excluded from the global economic system. They're looked down upon. They have no jobs. They have no money. And, you know, Trump came in as some messiah to them to say, I understand you. And I just think it's more nuanced than that in a few different ways. I mean, the first is, I think obviously some people feel that way. I mean, if you look at rural data, there are parts of rural America in the South and in Appalachia that are struggling. But if you look at Iowa or Idaho or Wyoming or Montana or parts of coastal New England, you don't see that kind of deprivation at all. You see actually a very good life. And so it just didn't make sense, this left behind conversation, even if there's some truth that Trump connected with rural America. I mean, that can be true, but it's not necessarily for the reasons that the pundits would suggest.
When you say that small towns and rural towns, many of them are doing well, by what measure?
A bunch of different ones. So if you think about median household income, if you think about home ownership, unemployment, any of the kind of basic metrics that you would look at kind of a household's livelihood, rural America is doing really well. The only area that rural America isn't doing well is education. They're not as educated as our cities. And the thing that I think is quite interesting in this moment, because we certainly, those of us who live in cities, those of us who live on the coast, we place such a premium on the college degree. And even now, I think there's a bit of a reckoning there, because I think a lot of folks who have college degrees are still struggling to find jobs and to buy homes and are living with their parents. So there's been a sort of sense that that kind of meritocracy treadmill hasn't worked for everyone. But in addition, what I think is interesting is that a lot of rural Americans are doing really well despite not having a college degree, and that it hasn't been front and center for the folks I interviewed, particularly when they're talking about their children, in a way that it is almost unspoken, a given in coastal cities.
There seems to be this shorthand, I'll use your term, that has been around for a long time, that you can see in any main street in small town America the ingredients and the signs of a troubled economy that's coming before you will see it elsewhere. Is that true?
Well, I'm not. Are you trying to say that what basically happens is that you look at small town America and it becomes the lens in which we're going to see all of America X number of years?
And it can often be a predictor. So if you see that that a town that has all of the shops are busy and open, and then all of a sudden you see a shuttering, and that it is reflected there before it is reflected in more urban areas.
I think from a purely population standpoint, I can see how that tenant might hold up, in the sense that you have many less people in rural America, in a small town of 5,000, 3,000 people versus a city of, 8 million, like Los Angeles, that if shops start shutting down, they have a greater impact per shop, okay? But I actually have found a very different trend. I grew up as a student of urban and regional economy and geography. And the idea was that in the mid-20th century, maybe the latter half of the 20th century, you saw this kind of collapse of the manufacturing economy. So thinking 1960s, 1970s, it trickles into the 1980s, 1990s, that these good-paying jobs, and this happened both in our cities and in our rural towns, that you didn't need a college degree, they left, and that what really the whole economy was professional services, finance, and then technology. And that outside of our major superstar cities like New York and Chicago and Los Angeles, San Francisco, et cetera, that everywhere else was off the pace. This is a generalization, of course, but the places that were really hit hard were rural towns, which just were completely out of position. And this is an idea that I had subscribed to my entire kind of graduate school, through my, teaching. And then I started looking at the data on rural America. It's actually a really different story. So instead of, the rural towns being a leader in sort of suggesting a lagging economy, I actually found that they were benefiting over time from the very things that were beginning to power our urban economies. So for example, when the rise of the finance industry, takes hold in our cities as being essential, kind of a part of that whole economic restructuring around capital and human innovation and so forth, changing from things to ideas, that while finance and insurance grew by 25% or by 16% in urban areas, it grew by 25% in rural areas. And, if you think about something like software publishing, it exploded by 316% in rural America. So what I began to see, and there's plenty of different statistics on this, but I began to see was that the very industries and sectors that were driving growth in our cities were trickling in to our rural areas. And that's a really good thing, but it really challenges the conventional wisdom around this, that, you know, rural America just isn't a part of it. They are. It gets to them, you know?
One of the things that you point out in the book, which I think is so fascinating, is that rural and urban Americans often share very similar core values of whether this is views on racism or environmentalism or in how democracy should serve us as citizens, that there isn't this chasm that is often portrayed.
So this was one of the most heartening, exciting and surprising findings of my research. So I had started out just talking to people. That's my favorite kind of research. Just listen to what people say. They will give you their truth. And I had a series of questions on the environment, equality, racism, democracy, your favorite holiday, you know, all sorts of stuff. I just wanted to get to know these people. And I also threw in interviews with urban folks. And I found we really speak the same language. Like when we get out of the politics and we just talk about things we care about, the answers were remarkably similar. Like I would be, you know, halfway through a conversation with someone and realize that they were Republican, or halfway through and they were Democrat. And they were, and actually I interviewed a twice supporting, looking very supportive of Trump, and from, I think it was Milwaukee. And then a couple hours later, I interviewed a progressive public defender, same area, and their answers were almost identical. And so the reason I bring this up is that that was true a lot of the time. I mean, it wasn't like every single time. Of course, there were some people who would say things that were super lefty or super righty, but on the whole, that there's this similarity in what it feels like to be American and the things that we care about. So, of course, I use qualitative, you know, interviews, and I wanted to get a sense of this was, you know, something that we could see in a more general sense with other survey data. So the University of Chicago has this thing called the General Social Survey, and for decades, they have been interviewing Americans about their opinions on all sorts of things. And I looked at their data and cut it by urban and rural, and the data was unbelievably similar. Like, I'm trying to think of the exact percentage, but something like 44% of urban Americans have lost their faith in democracy. 47% of rural Americans have lost their faith in democracy. If you think about things like the environment, which we really associate with the progressive urban left, the sense I got on kind of every issue was that Americans actually have a shared sense of what they value and care about.
So on that subject, and talking about those similarities that people have, so where does the disconnect come? Why does our country then seem so divided?
I think there's a couple of things going on. I think the first is that the media, that has been the narrative that they have conveyed in newspapers, television, podcasts, you name it. And I don't think that there's sort of ill intent. I think that, you know, the media needs to, you know, get people to click and buy papers and listen. And it's a lot more interesting to talk about a divided country than to talk about actually a lot of people feel the same way about a lot of things. But I also think that they're getting their information from the tails. I mean, there's two political scientists, and I think the book is called Why We're Divided. And the book essentially argues that 80% of Americans are moderates. And so when we're talking about a divided country, we're talking about the tails. And the tails are loud, and they are squeaky, and they make their voices known. And then they become the story of a divided America, when most Americans are much more in the middle. You know, maybe they voted Republican, maybe they voted Democratic, but they're not as angry or emotional about these issues, about politics. So I think that that's a big part of why we seem divided. The other thing is a little more nebulous, but I think even more powerful. A subject that I'm really interested in is cultural capital. And the idea of cultural capital is the notion of all of your education, your knowledge, your resources, and how you use them to essentially convey your social position in the world. So, you know, a Harvard bumper sticker is some form of cultural capital. Your ability to speak fluently about an opinion page is a form of cultural capital. You know, did you watch Succession? You know, this is the currency of what do I know about, what does this show about my social position, who I am, and so forth. And we're very, the kind of coast really value their form of cultural capital. You know, the college degrees, the New York Times op-ed page, the movies we watch, the TV shows we watch, the podcasts we listen to, and so forth. And that becomes kind of the only cultural capital. And there's a reason for that in the sense that it's, and this is something I wrote about in my last book, it's really linked to social mobility. I mean, the way in which folks apply to university, show that they should go, has an awful lot to do with, I speak three languages, I play piano, I travel the world. You know, that's the kind of fluency of the meritocracy and their cultural capital. But the thing I really realized when I interviewed rural Americans was they had cultural capital too. It just wasn't valued. I mean, everyone has cultural capital. I mean, all of us do. And it is very geographically and socially specific. But when I talked to rural Americans, you know, they cared about religion. They cared about their local community. They cared about not just holidays, but the relationship of holidays to their community, their family. This is their cultural capital. And what you realize is it's not valued. And sometimes with regard to over religiosity, it can be looked down upon by the coast. And that, I think, is part of it, is that folks feel left out. They feel excluded. They don't feel valued. So if you actually talk to someone, you find out we have a lot in common. But if the idea is that, you know, what you do with your Sunday and what I do with my Sunday are different and mine is better, well, of course, rural Americans are going to feel excluded.
When it comes to the word resilience, which is used in the subtitle of the book, the resilience of our rural towns and what it means for our country, what does it mean for urban areas? What does it mean for the cities?
I think it means a few things. The first is, I think, just to not forget about rural America or dismiss it so easily. And I think that this is both an economic and social point, that it is an extremely important part of America and its society and its economy. So I think that's a huge part of it. I also think that to understand the way in which rural America has weathered the global restructuring of our economy, the changing social and cultural mores of, you could argue, the meritocratic hegemonic class, you know, or what I mean by that, you know, the dominant media outlets driving a certain narrative, driving certain cultural changes. And it's still there, and it still has something meaningful to say, and it's still a part of that story. And I think that is the thing that really stuck out to me, is that despite all of these changes and this idea that rural America is just, you know, excluded from them, whether it's economic, social, or cultural, it's just not true if you look at the numbers and if you talk to the people there. And I think if we were more dialed into that, we would feel less divided. If we actually, you know, folks I would talk to in Idaho, Missouri, would have the same open, tolerant views of the world that we live with our coasts, and I think we don't give it enough credit.
Are there advantages of being overlooked in the sense that that if the word gets out that things are too good, in small towns, it screws up what makes them great.
Oh, that's an interesting question. You know, I think you're onto something with that. Some of the people I talked to were very pleased to be left alone. I remember one man I interviewed said, "We don't feel left behind, Elizabeth. We want to be left alone." And, you know, another gentleman I interviewed just saying how he just liked to live his life and come and go as he pleased. And so I think that there's some truth that to not be in the spotlight, you know, cause or effect, is there's something nice about that too. And it's clear that plenty of rural Americans, that's kind of part of the great benefit of living in small town America is to be out of the spotlight. I mean, I think increasingly politicians and the media are realizing that this is a place that needs to be explored more deeply. But I think for those who live there, that is a benefit to just be able to live your life.
The name of the book is The Overlooked Americans, The Resilience of Our Rural Towns and What It Means for Our Country. Elizabeth Currid-Halkett is the author. It is published by Basic Books. Elizabeth, thank you so much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Oh, thank you so much, Joe. I really enjoyed talking with you.
Be well. Thank you so much. Again, the name of the book is The Overlooked Americans. It is published by Basic Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.